they all make the same mistake, which is to praise the idea of faith, elevated over reason and evidence, and to say, on the most important thing of all, which is, why are we here? What are we to do? What is the meaning of our life? On the most important questions, they say that it's very important to decide it without evidence, that you must make an unprovable assertion, and then demand respect for it. Well, I think the sleep of reason brings forth monsters.
Dr. Craig, we have yet to do a podcast on the Hitchens debate, and boy, we would just really need to. There's been a lot of information at reasonablefaith.org on this debate with Christopher Hitchens out in Los Angeles at Biola, and a lot on YouTube about it. Pretty good coverage as on this debate. Being that he is a journalist, he's very popular, and he's one of the four horsemen of the so-called New Atheism. And so this was a strategic debate, I think, as well, to confront one of the four horsemen in a very influential movement who's had a bestseller.
Yes, I think it was strategic in that sense, Kevin. Initially, I was reluctant to do this debate because I have had pretty negative experiences in the past debating with people who are not themselves scholars. You can't argue with someone who doesn't understand logic, who doesn't understand that they have just made an incoherent statement or that their conclusions don't follow from their premises. Argumentation is almost futile with someone who doesn't understand argument. So I've had some less than pleasant debates with graduate students or lawyers in the past where they just weren't very good debates. And so I didn't really want to do this thing with Hitchens. But the folks at Biola just pressed me very hard and said he's a prominent spokesman for the New Atheism, and it would be very important for someone to debate him and just to really expose the superficiality and the emptiness of his rhetoric. And so for that reason, I did take it on, and I'm glad that I did. I thought the debate went well.
The Frank Zindler debate that you did in Chicago is similar to this because Frank Zindler was considered to be unbeatable when it came to debating, and that if you just really wanted to put the Christian in his place, bring in Zindler from the American Atheist, because he would just mop the floor with you. In fact, Robbie Zacharias was told that. He said,
really?
You know, I tell you what we'll do. You think you know you can debate? We'll put Zindler up against you.
And yeah, I remember when they were looking for the atheist opponent for that debate, and they picked Zindler. And Lee Strobel and Mark Middleberg said, well, can't you get a bona fide scholar, someone who is more credentialed? And Rob Sherman, the American Atheist fellow, said, oh, no. He said, this is our man. This is the guy that we want to do this. And as I watched videos in preparation for that debate, it turned out that Zindler could be a formidable opponent. I saw him debate some Christians, and he really took them to pieces. So that was a kind of similar confrontation in that this was a popularizer sort of fellow who could be rhetorically effective. It was also similar in another sense, Kevin. I think these were the two most widely disseminated or broadcast debates that I've been in. Both of them had huge audiences live of several thousand people. And then both of them were also being simultaneously broadcast, either through radio or internet, just all around the country and even in foreign nations. So they were very similar in that sense as well.
Let me just say, you were extremely successful in that debate. And that, again, was strategic because it put to rest this idea that no one could beat this American Atheist spokesperson and who did not make a good showing in this debate. And I think that launched a lot of things for Reasonable Faith, in that Zondervan published that, and a lot of people picked that up in bookstores and things like that and have watched that debate.
That's the great thing about these recordings, is that they have a life of their own long after the event is gone and forgotten. People in Australia have been watching the Zindler debate, as you say, and now this Hitchens debate as well, being professionally recorded by Illustra Media, should go out just all over.
Well, some comments on the debate then.
Well, I had a little bit of fun with the debate because 2 weeks before the debate, I was on a panel discussion with Christopher Hitchens in Dallas at this Christian book exposition. And on the panel were Doug Wilson and Lee Strobel as well, and some other folks. And I had the last word in this panel discussion and was able to summarize, I think, 10 arguments that the theists on the panel had presented for Christian theism. And opposed to that was just one argument that Christopher Hitchens had offered. And even that, he admitted, was answered if you take a Christian theological perspective. So he really had nothing to stand on. So he was seated right to my left, immediately at my left elbow. So I turned to him and I said, now in 2 weeks, we're going to be debating these issues at Biola University. And I hope that you'll use that time to do a little homework so that we can have a more substantive discussion when we meet. And I was just needling him a little bit, you know, kind of teasing him. And unfortunately, he didn't use those 2 weeks to do much homework, I'm afraid.
Well, he depends
because the discussion wasn't any better.
No, and he depends on his rhetorical skill. He is a wordsmith. And he's awesome to listen to. You want to let him talk because he's so interesting and he has such a way with words. What we have to do, however, is look beyond that and see if there's any substance to
And that's hard for many people to do, Kevin. You know, you hear that British accent and it sounds so urbane and so intelligent. And then, as you say, the rhetoric, the comparisons of God to a North Korean dictator, things of this sort, they're very visual images and makes him for an engaging speaker, as you say. And it's hard for people to actually look beyond that and assess the substance of the argument.
He came over to a table where I was sitting after the panel discussion that you're referring to. And he remarked along the lines of, I'm rather surprised at this new trend in Christianity of actually having facts and evidence to back up what you believe. He says, I thought it was just about faith.
Yes. He mentioned that in one of the events that I was involved in, either the panel discussion or perhaps the debate. He thought apologetics was something new, radical turn. Somehow, and I thought, my goodness, had he never heard of C.S. Lewis? As a British person, you would think he would have heard of Lewis or other great British scholars, but evidently he had not. And on the one hand, that's discouraging to think that we had so little impact in that area. On the other hand, it is encouraging that here is a new atheist who is suddenly being confronted for the first time with argument and evidence for the Christian faith, and finds this to be something new and challenging that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it could, God could use it, and this is our hope with Reasonable Faith Ministries, is that God can use that to begin to work on a person.
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. I saw in the open forum the other day an email from a fellow who had lost his faith something like 20 years ago, and when someone asked him why, he said, oh, it was because in talking with people, I could see that the most insightful people were non-Christians, and that my reasons for believing in Christianity were all fear-based and were utterly untenable, and I just began to see I had no reasons to believe what I believe at all. And so this person walked away. And I think we can prevent that from happening if we can show Christian kids, high schoolers and others, that some of the most reflective and deep people are Christians. And the fact is, that's the truth. They really are. And that, moreover, Christianity isn't fear-based or just a leap of faith into the dark. That there are really good arguments and evidence for what we believe. And that these hold up in one-on-one, face-to-face confrontations with the best that secular atheism and agnosticism can offer.
Now, at the same time, Hitchens indicates that this, what he sees falsely as a new trend in Christianity, he thinks that it's a capitulation to science and that the advance of science is causing Christianity to change. And if it continues in this way, then Christianity will go away and be taken over by science because the evidence is against God and so on. So, in another way, he's not very congratulatory. He's also saying, well, you're adjusting your belief to new data that is coming in, and that's going to erode your faith.
That's just, again, historically naive. If you look at, for example, the history of apologetics, you can see from Isaac Newton on prominent scientists appealing to scientific evidence, especially the Bridgewater treatises on the argument for design or the teleological argument, the Gifford lectures then founded in Britain to defend natural theology. The fact is that all along the line, Christians and scientists have been in dialogue with one another and not at all seeing science as opposed to the Christian faith. So this is not any kind of new movement or capitulation, not at all. This is a historical process, and we simply stand at the current edge of it.
His second contention in the debate, what he tended to want to argue, was that where was God throughout human history? He really brought up the problem of evil a lot. And why in human history is God so late to the game? What about all the horrible things that people have been through prior to Christ and so on? So he had kind of a argument from outrage on what he saw as God being absent.
It's not clear exactly what this argument is, Kevin. I'm not sure that Hitchens himself understands.
Well, I called it an argument from outrage. I'm not even sure that would completely characterize it.
I mean, for example, when I asked him in Dallas, I said, you say that God has delayed 98,000 years before sending Christ to humanity, and that this is very, very late in the game. And I said, well, that seems to me that what counts as late is relative. If humanity endures for another 100,000 years, then it would turn out that Christ came right in the middle of human history, wouldn't it? And so it wouldn't be late in the game. And he said, well, yeah, I guess that's right. I mean, it was as though he virtually conceded the point. So the argument can't be that it's late or too late for Christ to come. It must be, well, what happened to all those people that died before Christ came? But gosh, Christians believe that God has always been active in human history, and we have a record of salvation history in the nation of Israel and how God has been preparing Israel for the advent of the Messiah. And we believe that Christ's atoning death is efficacious for everyone who came before Christ and will be salvific or will save persons who respond in an appropriate way to God's revelation to them. So there's just not really a problem there that I can see.
Notice that it's an internal question, internal to Christianity, internal to God's existence, and I thought he's supposed to be a big atheist. I mean, he's arguing, why is God, who apparently exists, so late? Now, the implications are that means God doesn't exist. But he's not really arguing for atheism. He's arguing an internal problem of God's timing.
Well, that's very interesting, Kevin, because on this panel discussion, when Doug Wilson pointed out that Christ's death was efficacious for those who came before Christ, it's not as though these people were neglected or overlooked. Hitchens admitted, well, yes, that solves the problem, but I don't see any reason to believe in Christianity. Well, as you say, that just evacuates the argument of any significance then. The issue will be then, do we have good reasons to believe Christianity is true? And it will not be an objection to Christianity to say, well, God overlooked all those folks because he admits that on Christianity, they're not overlooked. So where's the argument? Where's the objection? I don't see it.
When you watch the debate, Christopher Hitchens at the end just kind of foregoes his final statement and saying, well, look, I'm not going to get anywhere with this William Lane Craig guy. I mean, he's going to answer everything I say. So he wanted to get right to the Q&A, question and answer. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that was a real shock to me, too. I gave my closing statement, and then Hugh Hewitt got up to have Hitchens give his closing statement. Hitchens just waved the closing statement, said he didn't want to give one. And so Hewitt then went to the audience directly for questions. It seemed as though Hitchens had just an attitude of resignation and almost passivity by that point.
Well, he feels like he can handle the layman a little easier, I'm afraid. I mean, he does want to get that interaction so that he's more comfortable dealing with people who have less complex questions and so on. Now, I'm not going to accuse him of purposely punting to that, but again, it is a dependence on his rhetorical skill and his persuasiveness that he was going to at this point.
He was unusually subdued in that debate. I don't know if it was because of the venue or what, but he didn't really get into his rhetoric until his rebuttal speech. And then he began to appeal to the North Korean dictator and these other examples of his purple prose. But by then it was really too late. And so I think by the time of the final speech, he was just ready to be done with it.
Dr. Craig, as we conclude, there was something encouraging that Christopher Hitchens said, and that is he wanted to come to the States and interact with all these Christians who've been emailing him and flaming him and, you know, everything in the world. And he was willing to come and be among us and come to our venues and say, okay, let's talk about this. But he made a comment at the panel that he's been treated so well by the Christian community.
Yes.
So he was very appreciative of how well he was treated. And he was certainly given a lot of time to talk on that panel.
Yes. Yes, that's right. He wasn't bullied or outnumbered or, in that sense. And he is taking more and more speaking engagements for Christian audiences, which I thought was intriguing. The cynic in me thinks that, well, he's just discovered another source of big fat honoraria. And that the Christian community is willing to pay big dollars to get him to come. But on the other hand, there may be a genuine desire here for real dialogue with Christians to hear what they have to say and to share his perspective. And I hope that that's his motive.
Any comments on his book? Did you go through it? God is Not Great?
I did not go through the book myself, Kevin, because I have to shepherd my reading time very carefully, or I can become distracted from the focus of my scholarly research, which is on a quite different topic. What I did do was I asked my teaching assistant, Joe Gora, to go through Hitchens' works and to find any passages in the books that would address any of the five arguments for God's existence that I typically use in my debates. And so Joe got back to me with whatever Hitchens might have said about the cosmological or the fine-tuning argument or the moral argument, and there just really wasn't very much there, frankly. He didn't address these in his books any more than he did in the debate. So I didn't read the book through myself, no. I just asked my research assistant to look for the important and relevant parts of it.
Seems to be a rant against the religious right, and I find this quite often. People don't have a problem with God or Christianity or Christ, but they are afraid of the religious right and the theocracy, and that they're all going to come in our business and bedrooms, and we're not going to have any freedoms. And so if that's your beef, fine. But what does that have to do with whether God exists and whether Christianity is true?
Boy, that's right. There are plenty of Christians who have a beef with the religious right as well, and they don't think that that disproves the existence of God or the resurrection of Jesus. So we mustn't think that these political issues are at all essential to the truth of the Christian worldview.
Absolutely. One final comment from you, Bill. Why are these atheist books such bestsellers? I guess because they would have an audience. I guess Christians and religious people would be curious about them. But Hitchens' book, along with the other so-called new atheists, have of late been very good on the bestseller list.
Yeah, they have obviously scratched an itch in our culture, haven't they? And I think they have raised the consciousness of atheism in our culture in a way that Richard Dawkins, for example, said was his goal. And I'm not sure what to attribute this to, except for a kind of increasing secularism in American Western society that you already see in Europe and in Canada, for example, and now is becoming very vociferous in the United States, and this really struck a chord. Probably the attacks of 9/11, I think, poisoned many people's minds against fundamentalist religion, and Christianity got tarred with the same brush. And certainly these new atheists are guilty of lumping all religious believers together and condemning them all for the atrocities of these extremists.
Dr. Craig, will there be a Dawkins debate?
No. He has resolutely refused to debate, and he's been approached by very high-level folks who have set up previous events that he has done with John Lennox, and he's just adamant it's not going to happen.
Thank you so much for listening to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. One more time, if you would like to start a Reasonable Faith chapter in your area, information is at reasonablefaith.org. And by the way, if you appreciate the information that you get at reasonablefaith.org and you would like to see these podcasts continue, and see us branch out even further, then be a partner with us. You can find out how when you go to reasonablefaith.org. Your financial and prayer support means a great deal to us. That's reasonablefaith.org, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.